Here's why you need to attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. Reason number one is networking. The opportunity to connect in person with like-minded recruitment business owners and share strategies and best practices. Of course, you can do that via Zoom or Teams, but the connection is deeper when you do it in real life. Wouldn't you agree? One of our previous attendees, Darcy, said that she loved the speakers and the content, but the best part for her...
But mostly, it's honestly been the in-between. So like when there's little breaks or when there's lunches and you're getting to connect with these other business owners and hear from their stories, like having that connection means the world to me. So I'm so glad I was here.
The quality of people in the room will be incredible, including many of the people you've heard me interview on this podcast. There's going to be big billing recruiters as well as business owners with multi-million pound businesses. What they all have in common is that they prioritize their own development, and no matter how successful they already are, they want to keep learning and growing. What's even more special and remarkable about this group is that they're all willing to share their knowledge, and they're so generous at helping each other improve. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit.
My mom raised me to be, hardworking. To never give up, with her in mind, I just kind of pulled over to the side of the road. I wrote an email to the CEO and said, look, I know I can do this. I've never quit in anything. I've never failed at anything. Give me a second chance. Just don't even pay me. Let me show you what I can do in the first 3 months. And if I fail, then at least I know I gave it a fair shot. And if you have to fire me, I can be okay with that.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today we're joined by Dario Furman.
I'm glad that you have this podcast because this industry, unfortunately, does not have the best reputation. And I've heard this from multiple candidates at all levels. They feel like they can't trust the recruiter. Like they're being sold something that either is not true or they just want the fee. Building that relationship makes it a lot easier to be introduced to someone because they feel, because of that intro, they can trust us.
Dario's recruiting story started with a crash course in resilience after being fired from his first recruiting job just 3 days in. Since that time, he's gone on to place over 500 professionals in his 17-year recruitment career.
As long as you treat people the way they're supposed to, it'll always come back to you. People will remember you not because you have the best jobs or the best candidates. It's because you treated them in the right way. And that's the way that this business should be built. Not by trying to get 50 jobs and hopefully one of the candidates matches. That's not a successful recruiter.
Dario joined Stephen Douglas, an executive recruiter, in 2014, where he placed his finance and accounting talent in the South Florida market. Since joining the firm, he's billed over $6.5 million, which is incredible. And by the way, Stephen Douglas is ranked number one in executive search for Florida, as well as number 19 nationally by Hunt Scallion.
It wasn't about how many calls you made. There was no KPIs, which I value. It was about what relationship can you build with the person? What value can you give them? Whether we collect a fee or we don't, because one day they will come around. If they're a candidate and you can't place them, but you can give them great advice, I promise they will come back as a client because they'll remember how you treated them.
Interesting fact about Dario is he's fluent in both Spanish and English. And his philosophy combines old school recruiting focus on face-to-face relationships, as well as modern recruiting tools. He's known for being thorough, professional, and fiercely committed to delivering for his clients. Dario, welcome. Thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's quite an honor to be invited on your podcast. I've been listening for almost a year now, and I never thought I'd have the chance, but I'm honored to be here. Thank you for your time.
Well, we're honored to have you. You were referred by one of our clients, James Cairns, who I believe is a mutual,
yes.
who's a friend of yours. And we always ask people, like, because good people know good people, right? We ask our clients and previous podcast guests, like, who would you recommend? Like, who are the best people you know that might be a good guest on the show? And he led us to you. So now I'd love to hear this story. I alluded to it in the intro there, but your recruitment career got off to a rocky start. Well, actually, let's back up a second because I think you're originally from Buenos Aires, is that right?
Yes, yeah. I was born in Buenos Aires. My mom brought me here when I was three, to Miami.
Okay, to Miami. Okay. So how did you get into recruiting? And let's start there. And then tell me the story of, like, you didn't get off to the best start in this profession.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, I graduated from University of Florida with an accounting degree. It was not a great time. It was 2007. Job fairs were a little lean, even for accounting. And I joined a global CPA firm. Within maybe 3 or 4 months, I got a call from a friend. We went to college together. He was a few years older than myself, but he had recruited several of individuals coming out of the accounting program, including James Kearns. And we all joined the company called CSI in Jacksonville. At the time, I was still living in Gainesville, so I was driving. For the first week, right? The idea was to get comfortable with the Jacksonville area, but the plan was to move to Orlando and start up a finance and accounting search practice there. I was driving from Gainesville to Jacksonville. Every day for training and everything else. And on the third day, at the end of the third day, the person that recruited me that I knew, for 4.5 years, sat down with me and said, look, I don't know how to say this, but I don't think this is going to work out. And I've never been fired before. So of course my face turned red. I started thinking, why? So I naturally asked, What made you come to this conclusion? And his words were, I just don't think that you have the communication or the grit to do it.
Wow. So that's harsh, man, yeah. Especially from someone who you know, right? That's pretty brutal. So what happened from there?
Well, I didn't have a choice but to drive back the 2 hours to Gainesville, just thinking to myself, like, what did I do? I left an accounting, profession to do this. 3 days in, was that enough for valuation? And I mean, my mom raised me to be, hardworking, to never give up. With her in mind, I just kind of pulled over to the side of the road and wrote an email. I went above, my friend. I wrote an email to the CEO and said, look, I know I can do this. I've never quit in anything. I've never failed at anything. Give me a second chance. If I can just start and don't even pay me. Let me show you what I can do in the first 3 months. And if I fail, then at least I know I gave it a fair shot. And if you have to fire me, it's okay. I can be okay with that. A few days later, I did get a response saying that he would. That he would bring me back, but for half of the salary that I was earning before, pretty much within, I think it was 6 weeks into the role, I had my first placement, within the first year I was top 15 in the nation, and every year after that, so the next 4 years, I was in the top 3 in the United States.
Wow, I love that story. That's phenomenal, Dario. But I mean, so credit to you for not accepting. You're like, no, that's not 3 days. You've not seen what I can do yet. Like that does seem very fast to make that kind of decision. But I love the way you process. I mean, obviously, that's going to be a pretty devastating blow to anybody. But once you'd processed it, you went back, and I love the way you handled that. And then you had really something to prove, didn't you? But why? I don't understand why you're coming back on half. What was the rationale there? Half your salary.
So they said that they couldn't bring me back because I had asked them if I could come in not earning anything. And he said, it's a liability. We can't do that. But we'll bring you back at half and to kind of motivate you to get to back where you were. I mean, back then it wasn't that much, right? It was 30,000. It wasn't much. The sale was always the commission. The reason that attracted me so much is that there was no ceiling to how much you could make, which was the sale. And I knew that I could prove myself and I knew that I could do it. So it didn't matter to me, what they brought me. I'm just glad that they brought me back.
Okay. All right. Awesome. It's funny. I don't think I told you this story when we've chatted before. I got my first job in recruitment because I had no experience, but I thought, hey, I think I can do that. And it looks like you can make good money, you know, doing that. And so I applied I saw an ad, recruitment agency was growing and they were hiring, you know, trainees basically, but I knew I didn't have the experience. So I offered to work for free for 2 weeks to like, just let them see what I could do. And that got me the interview. And then they said, you know what, like, we wouldn't hire someone with no salary. So we're just going to hire you on normal, you know, basis. But it did work to get my foot in the door. So tell me, a few days later, so it's like the week after you got fired, what did you do? How did you approach things? What was your mindset and your kind of overall approach to make sure that you were successful at this?
I think a lot of it had to do with mindset. I went into it, not knowing what I was doing, but that I'd give it a try because of what had happened. I think that the amount of determination I had, because I was told you couldn't do it, I put everything to the side. My personal life, everything. I just kind of gave it 110%. That's all I committed to. I would come in at 7 in the morning and I would leave at 7 p.m. And I did that for the first 3 years. I tried to outwork every single one around me. I listened to the best recruiters within the company. I sat around them and I listened to, how they spoke to candidates, how they spoke to clients, how they dealt with rebuttals. And I tried to kind of grab the stuff that they were doing that worked really well and leave behind the stuff that was not, and try to make something that was personal to me with a little, with the positive and negative that I learned from each of them to create something that could create value. At that time, I was only recruiting. I never really dealt with clients the first 5 years with CSI. I didn't really have any clients. So I was purely supporting two rainmakers in the Fort Lauderdale office.
So Dario, wait a second. Why did you stay in a recruiting role for 5 years instead of becoming a rainmaker yourself? That seems like a long time to sort of serve as an apprentice in effect. Now, I know some people just only want to be on the candidate side because they enjoy that and they prefer working half a desk. But I think given what I know about you and kind of being ambitious and really wanting to, wanting to be super successful, I'm just wondering why they waited 5 years to give you the opportunity.
I don't think it was that they waited. When I started there back, right, I worked in Jacksonville the second or third week of June up until September, and then I moved over to Fort Lauderdale to build out the practice there in 2007. The idea was to learn as a recruiter and then move into a kind of rainmaker or half and half type of role. I think it had to do a lot with my confidence. It was a personal thing. It wasn't them believing in me. I think I had shown them what I could do. I think it was a confidence thing. And my boss today, when I first started, gave me that same response. Like, you need to have more confidence in your own skills because you're good at what you do. You just need to see it for yourself. It took a while. To be honest, I don't think I started to believe in myself truly until COVID, to be honest.
Wow, that's interesting. And so, look, this game is so much about mindset, isn't it? Like, it's such a huge, obviously you need to have the knowledge, the skills, the, integrity and all those other attributes, but, confidence and self-belief and having the mindset that you can do it, is at least 50%, I think, of this whole, this game. So, why do you think you were lacking in confidence? And then what shifted during COVID that turned things around for you?
So lacking in confidence, I would say is, I was very comfortable with candidates. I felt that it was a very easy cold call to call a CFO that wasn't looking. But when I looked at it as calling a CFO and selling them a candidate, that's where I got nervous. I saw very incredible people around me doing it, but I didn't feel like I could do it. And during COVID, we didn't have a choice. It was, you had to survive. And I went through something like that in, you know, 2007, 2008, 2009, right when I started recruiting, where the idea was to do finance and accounting search. The world crashed, right? I went from focusing on purely finance and accounting within a, you know, geographical area of the Southeast to, doesn't matter what job they bring in. There were times where I'd work on a nurse, an RN at 11 a.m. and at 2 p.m. I was working on a senior accountant, and then I'd end the day with a cook for a hospital. So it was
there you go.
It was all over the place.
You need to do what you need to do, right, to pay the bills. So I get that. Everyone was scrambling. That was a horrendous, like, I still think I have PTSD from 2008. It was really tough. So then during COVID, obviously companies stopped, well, not all companies, but a lot of companies stopped hiring completely for a few months, and nobody knew what the hell was going to happen. And so it was make it or break it. You had no choice. You had to dive in and try and drum up business. So your back was against the wall, and that does motivate everybody. I mean, if you've got no choice, you just do it. But what happened next? Like, as you forced yourself to reach out to CFOs, but wearing their client hat instead of their candidate hat, what happened from there?
So the mindset that I had at that point was kind of just to reach out and see how people were doing. I wasn't trying to sell. I was literally trying to call and say, how's your company doing? How are you doing? Anyone on your team getting laid off? Anyone that I could help? That turned into jobs given, you know, being given to me because I was doing, you know, right by them by just checking in where no one else was. What they were saying to me, the feedback was, recruiters were calling them asking for business. They weren't asking how COVID was actually affecting them as an individual or their team members or their organization. To be honest, most of the candidates today that I represented prior to COVID are my biggest clients today. And a lot of the candidates that I represented during COVID are clients that I have today. And what I learned from that, right, was if you do right by them, what I mean is calling them when you don't have a job, but just letting them know you're still thinking about them, calling a client and checking in on an individual that you placed and seeing how they're doing. Small little things that you would think are normal practice in this industry are overlooked. So I think a lot of that had to do with not the mindset wasn't sell. The mindset was be human and check in and see how they're doing. And it was so much easier than I thought. Before, I was just terrified of calling and selling. Since that day, I can be honest, I don't look at the sales part of this job as a sale. It's literally just representing a human and getting to know the individual and building a relationship just the same way that I would have on the candidate side.
Absolutely. That's an amazing story. Thank you for sharing that, because I think that will resonate for so many people. And we all have mind blocks to things, right? And so, whether it's embracing AI or whether it's, you know, changing, like adopting a different business development strategy, or whether it's going from contingent to retained, or maybe it's moving up to a more, like placing more senior individuals or increasing your fee percentage, or there's so many things that we can all have mind blocks about. Maybe it's to do with our personal fitness or like what we're capable of, right? I think that is the human condition. We all have those things. But that realization that the CFO is the same person, right? Whether I'm calling them as a client or a candidate, let's maybe just remove like that partition in our mind where we're thinking of buckets, like we've got candidates over here, we've got clients over there, and realize they're all just human beings, right? And we can connect with them, we can bring value, can build a relationship. And then, you know, on one occasion, you might help them with their next step in their career. On a different occasion, you might help them to build their team. And it's trying to reframe that whole scenario so that it's less intimidating. Because I think that's so common. A lot of recruiters find it easier to talk to candidates, but they place clients up here on a pedestal instead of realizing that they're equal. Like we're all human beings. We're all equal in that sense. Even if they have a more senior job title than I do, they're not any better than me, right? That's kind of the way I've looked at it. But so then that was a long time ago. And since then, you've gone to place over 500 people. Oh, by the way, one more thing I want to say about your approach during that first 3 years. You mentioned the importance of listening to people around you, learning both what you thought was worth emulating and replicating for yourself, and also the things you thought, yeah, I don't think that's effective. I'm going to try my own way. I think that is so valuable. And it's one of the downs. I think remote working and having flexibility is awesome. Our whole company is remote. But I think one of the downsides is that ability to learn from other people around you is curtailed. I think you can still do it, but you have to be very intentional about it. So for example, we tell all our clients, we advise all our clients that they should be recording every call, whether it's with clients, candidates, whether it's on the phone, via Zoom. Make sure you record all of those, because there's a lot you can do with the transcripts using AI that's really valuable. But B, from a learning and development point of view, that's a tremendous resource, whether it's for self-learning and critiquing your own performance on calls in different situations, different stages of the process, or if it's creating almost like a library of greatest hits that other recruiters can listen into. This is how you close an offer. This is how you negotiate a fee, et cetera. I think that is a way around it, but I still think you miss something, right? From just the accidental overhearing of conversations and stuff. But,
correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would completely agree with you. I mean, if, you know, I've seen the best, recruiters in, at Stephen Douglas, at other, competitors, right? Like the individuals that have kind of rose to the top are the individuals that, dedicate themselves to be in office as much as possible, pre-COVID, post-COVID. That advice I would give any recruiter, doesn't matter if you have 2 years of experience or 10 years, is try to surround yourself by recruiters that are much better than you. And that's why I came to Stephen Douglas, right? I actually NPC'd myself to Stephen Douglas.
Okay, excellent. Tell me about that.
Yes. I was at another firm. It wasn't a right fit, unfortunately. And I opened up the South Florida Business Journal and looked at the top executive search firm. Stephen Douglas was number one. I at the time, I was learning how to actually NPC candidates. So I used those skills to NPC myself.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So a few days later, I actually got an interview and got the job. And the reason I picked Stephen Douglas was I was able to surround myself with the best of the best, from my point of view, right? Which I still think that. And listening to them, listening to how they did things, it was completely different from how I had learned, which it was more transactional. It was very hard to build a relationship with my previous roles, which was recruiting all over the United States, no specialty, no geographical, region that you focused on. So individuals that I would speak to and not place, I would never place again or contact. Very hard to create a relationship. So being here, being surrounded by them, listening to them every single day, I got to learn it wasn't about transaction. It wasn't about KPIs. It wasn't about how many calls you made. Like there was no KPIs, which I value. It was about what relationship can you build with the person? What value can you give them? Whether we collect a fee or we don't, what can you do for that person that makes them better? Because one day they will come around. If they're a candidate and you can't place them, but you can give them great advice, I promise they will come back as a client because they'll remember how you treated them, what process you gave them, the preps that you gave, you know, how thorough you were in the preps. They'll know that every candidate that you send them will run through the exact same circle that you ran them through, which they valued. So I got to listen from the best of the best. And again, I took the things that were great from most and left behind the things I just didn't see much value in. And I created something of my own. And that's the advice I would give, any recruiters, sit and actually soak up as much as you possibly can from the highest billers. There's a reason why they bill what they bill. It's not luck. Luck has some of it to do, but not year over year.
Exactly. Luck is luck, right? In the short term, it's a factor, right? But over time, the good luck and the bad luck is going to even out. And what you're left with is your own mindset, skills, and determination. And, that's what is going to make the critical difference. Since you joined the firm, you've made over 500 placements. 300. That's right. 500 careers. 391. Okay. Fantastic. I love that you track everything. So this is giving me some clues as to the way you think and the way you work. What's your playbook? How have you been so successful and made all those placements? Are there some core philosophies and or strategies that you can share?
Sure. Pre-COVID, I would say most of my placements were in the recruiter side. If I had to give it a percentage, I would say 80% recruiting, 20% on the sales side. So how I was able to be successful during that time was just outworking my competition. I came into a group, the majority of the 10 people I work with today, six or seven of them are still with the firm. So I was coming into a environment where it was much more experienced executive search professionals, individuals that have worked together for several years. And I was the newcomer. And I had to think of ways to outbeat them, right? At the time, they weren't using CareerBuilder. They weren't using Monster. They weren't using ZoomInfo, so I took advantage of that, and that's what I did. My first year, I made, 24 placements. I started in April, so from April to December, I made 24.
Awesome.
Yeah, which, it was hard. I'm not going to lie. I was probably working 12, 13 hours a day, but I came here to prove that I could keep up with them. The next year, again, I kind of focused on, putting my all even during what I was dealing with. So in September of 2014, my mom was diagnosed, with stage 4 cancer. It was tough. It was, a hard time, right? I was raised by her. No one else, and trying to put all my focus in executive search really helped me deal with kind of everything that I was dealing with, because if I wasn't as committed and with the team that I had, I don't think that I would have kind of survived everything that went with my mom. She ended up passing away in 2015. In 2015, I was still able to place 37 people. But a lot of that, was, because of the team effort. Most of the placements, as I mentioned earlier, I was supporting, one of the individuals on my team. And I was mostly on the recruiting side. So I'm glad that as a team, it kept me up.
Thanks for sharing that, Dario. you know, condolences for your mom. I know that's 10 years ago, but it sounds like, you know, she was super important to you. What, something that you indicated, which I think listeners can learn from, is putting in the hard work at that early stage of your career will pay dividends much later, right? Because, like, I don't personally think that working 13 hours a day is sustainable in the long run, right? But what it does mean is that later, you know, in your career, when other things are happening, you're getting married, you're having kids, you have older parents, you know, all those kinds of things are going to come up that require your focus. You can't, you know, be just all about work, but the foundation that you've laid early on in your career then allows you to work smarter, and you've got relationships and you have a network, and you can achieve like really great results without having to like knock yourself out all the time. And it allows you then to give the appropriate time to family and other things. So, how, like, looking at your sort of work-life balance today, how does it, like, what's a typical week? What are the other things you're juggling? And, cause you're still performing at a high level, but I'm assuming you're not, you know, working seven till seven.
No. I mean, the job definitely has gotten easier year over year. Because the more candidates that you represent and you do right by them, they come back. Right. So if I had to guess on how many NPCs I've done in the last 2 years and how many cold calls to get a job, I can easily say it's less than 20. It's not many. And again, I think a lot of that has to be attributed to representing them as a candidate. They remember how you treated them. And when they go and get a job, whether you place them or not, the majority of my clients today are not, were not placed by me. And the job gets easier, because I'm not having to work as hard. Like, to give you an example, this year I was grateful enough to be able to go to Spain, you know, for 3 weeks with my family. And I wasn't, I tried to work, but it's a little hard. So you get to enjoy your time. And I think you go through different phases. When I started here, I wasn't married. I didn't have kids. My son was born in 2018. My daughter was born in 2020. My work-life balance completely changed after my kids were born. I was still committed to the career, but you know, I had built up enough goodwill with candidates and clients that I was able to, you know, still bill and kind of increase my potential every year without having to work as hard. I think a lot of that has to do with the business model, which is kind of being focused on a specific geography, which for me is all the way from Miami-Dade to West Palm, and only in finance and accounting across all industries. So candidates that I spoke to that are in place, it doesn't mean that I can't place them or represent them as a client one day.
I support that 100%. Yeah. So we have in our framework, which is called the Recruitment Freedom Flywheel, one of the six pillars of a seven-figure recruitment business is our client acquisition accelerator. So that's a nine-step process to go from, you know, feast and famine to consistent clients. And step number one is to define your market niche, like put the parameters around that. And that could be industry, function, level, location. You know, there's a number of, you know, facets that you could use to define or delineate your market niche. But until you do that part, if you get that right, everything else, all the business development, the whole, everything is easier. And if you don't commit to something, but you're trying to be all things to all people, it's very hard. All of our other strategies kind of depend on that first step of knowing what your target, you know, market is. So,
yes, I agree.
So, yeah, buy into that 100%. Tell me about, you have a approach called targeted recruiting that you've mentioned to me before. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you leverage technology?
Yeah, I mean, my targeted recruiting, you know, I look at everything, and I think, you know, some of the stuff that I've sent you, I try to measure everything that I can, right? I don't think that you can improve anything you don't measure. So I always look at the number of a certain position that we fill, certain industries, and what I try to focus on are not closest to the dollar, right? Not like a senior accountant that we can place as quickly as possible. We'll still look at those, but more of if in any given year we place more controllers than we do any other search, my targeted search is going to be really more focused on the controller level, because the individuals that I'd recruit for one particular job, I could easily be able to represent on another search. And I use
So before you go into that, actually, I just want to double click about the KPIs. So you mentioned something interesting, which on the surface sounds like a contradiction, but I think I know where you're going with this. Part of what attracted you about your firm, apart from being number one in Florida, was that there were not KPIs per se that you were like had to be self-motivated. And yet you set your own KPIs for yourself, it sounds like.
Correct.
So tell me about that. What's your rationale there? Why is that important?
So I set up my own KPIs, and you can't say KPIs out loud at Stephen Douglas. It's frowned upon. I think it all has to do with kind of measuring your own performance, and I kind of re-engineered it. I looked at how many placements, I set a goal of how many placements I wanted to do, and then I worked backwards. In order to get one placement, how many send-outs? And in order to get that many send-outs, how many submissions, and then how many interviews? So I did track that for the first 7-8 years here. I no longer do it because I feel like I've got a handle of it. But in the beginning, I tracked it because I was able to determine where I was falling short, whether if it was the quality of the candidate that I was submitting, or if it was the quality of the submission, or if I didn't match the candidate well to that particular job, or if it was just luck, right? It wasn't a good match for whatever reason. I could look back at that and then determine if I had a bad month. I did everything I could. It wasn't my month.
Right. Good call. Yeah. That makes sense. I know when we'd caught up previously, you talked about the way that you build lists, the way you leverage AI and automation, the way you do personalization to generate relevant outreach that gets responses. Could you share a little bit more about that system?
Yeah, absolutely. So the using AI, for example, whenever I have a contained or retained search that we're working on, and it's a very specific industry, the list that I would build using ChatGPT is to create a list of every competitor within the area, and then I would go kind of after and find them either on LinkedIn or Zoom info. And instead of just sending a broad message that just said, hey, I'd like to speak to you about a controller position for X industry, I'd find something in common, whether it's a connection, whether it's a company maybe I've placed individuals at, or if it's education, it's something so that it doesn't look like it was a bot that sent the message. And I try to personalize it. And if I know of someone that is connected to them, which thankfully, working in one area for so long, the likelihood of that is very high. I'll use that one connection to call that individual, so that it's a warm introduction as opposed to just a random message on LinkedIn or on email.
Okay, let me clarify a couple of things. So when you say so chances are you know someone in common, right? And how do you leverage that mutual connection to get the conversation?
More than likely the person that I'm reaching out to help the intro is a person that I have a very good relationship with.
So you'll reach out to your mutual contact first?
Correct.
And say what?
I'll say, look, there's an individual that I'm trying to outreach for a position. I don't know if they're right for it, but I think it's worth the call. How well do you know X person? And if they know them, I'll ask them, for an intro. And it's a lot easier to be introduced to someone by someone that they may know, as opposed to, you know, not knowing them, and they don't know us, right? And what makes it hard, and one of the things I wanted to say is, I'm glad that you have this podcast, because this industry, unfortunately, does not have the best reputation. And I've heard this from multiple candidates at all levels, from staff all the way to a CFO, they feel like they can't trust the recruiter. Like they're being sold something that either is not true, or they just want the fee. So building that relationship makes it a lot easier to be introduced to someone, because they feel, because of that intro, they can trust us. And I want them to trust us, but if I send them a message and they have that false pretense about how they've been treated by other recruiters, I may not get a response.
This is brilliant, Dario. So you reach out to the connection. How well do you know so-and-so? They look like they potentially could be ideal for a search. I'm working. They say, oh yeah, I know them. They're excellent. Then how do you frame that request for an intro?
Just as a favor. Just to me the favor of you know, introducing me to them. Because at the end of the day, people want to help others. That's what it's all about. No one has ever really asked for anything in return. And if they do, I probably don't want to work with them, because it goes back to just a transaction as opposed to building a relationship. To be honest, most individuals that I speak to, they literally ask nothing in return.
Got it. So you don't have a referral scheme or anything. You're just asking as a favor, you know, and to help your friend to hear about what could be a great opportunity. You're just asking for an introduction. So fantastic. And what if they say they're not comfortable, like, personally reaching out to the individual, or they've lost touch and said, you know what, when I worked with them, they were great, but I'm not in touch with them anymore. So, you know, then would you just reach out directly but reference the conversation, or how?
No.
Like, what's plan B?
No, I would keep those conversations completely confidential if they weren't comfortable. Okay. Being the person to outreach, just reach out to them via LinkedIn or a cold call. At that point, it's just regular recruiting.
Okay. All right. Great. And what's your success rate at getting those intros from mutual acquaintances?
I can count on my two hands how many times I have not gotten a response. Not every single time the candidate's the right fit or they're looking.
Yeah.
But I can at least get that call.
Yeah. Fantastic. I love that. And here's the beauty. So we're going to talk about AI and automation stuff. Here's the risk, and we're leveraging, tools like clay.com, and we ourselves practice what we preach, which is, you know, getting good at cold outreach, using personalization, leveraging AI tools. But the problem is, as these tools get better and better, candidates and clients are going to get more and more emails, right? And so you reach a point of diminishing returns where, you know, the response rate, you know, declines, but the strategy that you're talking about is the antidote to that, right? It allows you to cut through. And this is why I'm confident that AI agents are not going to replace recruiters, right? Because I can quite well imagine getting to a point a year from now, 2 years from now, where a robot is able to identify candidates based on a criteria, find their contact information, write up some personalized messages, put them into a sequence. I could imagine a robot being able to do all that part, right? We're getting close now, right? That's not far away. But the problem is that doesn't mean the candidate's going to respond. So I think the companies who are like hoping to, you know, like avoid using recruiters, and they're going to just have the technology do the recruiting for them, are going to wake up to find that if they're just not getting the quality of individuals, attracting the quality of individuals through that completely automated way because, you know, whereas you have worked this market for 17, well, maybe not 17 years in that one market, but the last several years, right? You've got a very deep network. You have trusted relationships and you can get to those individuals and get them to respond to you. And that's part of the value that you bring to your clients. What are your thoughts?
I completely agree. I mean, the value that we create is the relationship that we have with that candidate. And when I get asked by clients, you know, why should we go with you? My response is honest and truth, which is the candidates I'm calling are going to take my call because they know me, not because I have a job to show them. When I call them, it's because, you know, they value the relationship that I have. And more than likely, you know, the role that I'm representing fits well because I know them. I know them as a person. I know them as a candidate. And I believe that the culture that they value matches what you guys have to give. You can't do that by just searching a bunch of names and matching words on a resume that match with the job description. You're right. A robot can probably match the words, but they'll never have the relationship and kind of managing the entire process from, you know, start to, you know, getting the person started. That a human interaction can.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I do love how you're using ChatGPT to build lists, though. That's smart. So now, as far as I know, through my own experiments and our clients, ChatGPT is not going to find the contact information of those individuals. But how accurate would you say those lists are that it's building for you?
So, I mean, the lists are pretty accurate. You have to be very specific. Like, for example, I was recruiting for a DSO, which is a dental service organization. And I asked it, and because it was a fully remote role, I had the entire U.S. to work with. So I was able to ask, give me a list of DSOs in the United States. That list was very broad. It wasn't it was accurate, but it didn't really give me all of them. So you have to be able to ask, you know, give me a list of 250, and you have to be very exact. Once you have that, pre ChatGPT, I'd have to create a Boolean and type one by one into the job, the company title in LinkedIn, and now it can convert a list into a Boolean in 3 seconds. So that entire process of the research and typing up the Boolean of 200 companies, which would normally take me hours, it can do in a matter of seconds. I'm also using ChatGPT to create, something that an idea that I got from Carol on your podcast, which is the client profile. So using all the notes that I take, which are pretty intense, including benefits, including location, including an org chart. I feed everything into the agent mode, and within maybe 30, 40 minutes, it spits out a PowerPoint, which I could easily convert into a PDF. And most of them have been anywhere between 10 to 15 pages, and it's all valuable information that I can easily send to a candidate that really grabs their attention, and clients have loved it.
Brilliant. I love that you're using things that you learned on the podcast to enhance like the your own practice. That's awesome, Dario. So this is brilliant, by the way. Any other ways that you're using AI or automation that you think is complementing your relationship, driven practice?
Again, something that I grabbed from your podcast, which was Craig's podcast a few years ago, which is Hearfish. We've been using Bullhorn for about 3 years now, but I don't think many of us have used the automation tool. I actually implemented an automation tool that actually responds and sends my contact info right after we get off the call, so they have my contact information. And then I also have it for scheduling. What I like to do is after any placement, whether it's through us or not, if I find out that one of my candidates that I was representing got a job, I always like to grab lunch with them to celebrate nice. Their job, whether it's through us or not. Again, it's about setting that relationship and celebrating that job change. And I use it to automate getting their availability to do that lunch.
That's a brilliant tactic. I've never heard that one, actually, Dario. That's a Dario Furman original. Yeah. Is track all the candidates that you're in touch with who end up getting a job, even if it's not through us, and let's invite them to lunch to celebrate. That's I love that. It's very elegant, simple, but effective.
Yeah. And the feedback is, the candidates love it. And to be honest, no other recruiter, even including the ones that are placing them, are inviting them to lunch.
Right. That's
mind-boggling.
This is genius, sir. I'll tell you why, because exactly right. So there's the recruiter who placed them, potentially has forgotten all about them and like, okay, great, got them across the line onto the next one. And they might follow up to say, hey, how are you getting on your new job? Or like in the first week, but you're the one who took them to lunch and not the other person. So, that's a really interesting strategy. I like that. Awesome. And by the way, if people were looking for the podcast episode you mentioned, it was Craig Paisley. It was from a few years ago, but we'll link to it in the show notes. And so it sounds like you're kind of just it sounds like you're creating your own playbook of automation strategies as well as manual strategies. There's certain things you just can't automate, right? Certain things that have to be manual. Taking clients to, candidates to lunch, getting an introduction from someone who you already know, those kinds of things. But the beauty of automation is it frees up time so you can reinvest more time on those human things that that move the needle. Any other automation or AI use cases?
Not yet. I mean, one of the things that I would love to implement, and hopefully our firm does, is the recording and the transcript of video interviews and as well as phone calls, which would be phenomenal because you want to make sure that any notes that you take are accurate and you don't overlook the smallest detail. And sometimes it's tough, and we live on our phones, right? I would love to say that I've taken every job order sitting in front of my desk. That's not the truth. And sometimes it's a little hard when you're in a commute or you're at home. It's tougher.
Absolutely. I've got a lead for you then. Definitely speak to the guys at Quill. We're trying to get them as a podcast sponsor. So if you tell them that you heard about them from me, then that would be awesome. It's quill.ai. It's a note taker for recruiting agencies. And I've met the guys, they're fellow Canadians, but they've been over to the UK. I've met them at NAPS as well in Las Vegas, and I met them at the Recruitment Agency Expo in London. And they're just really great guys, and they specialize in our industry. So definitely worth checking it out, doing your research. So what would you say, like, you've now been at this for 17 years. Someone who is earlier in their career to you, Dario, and, is really inspired by this conversation, and they'd like to achieve the success that you have, what's your advice for people who, are getting into recruiting and they want to really, build their career?
Sure. Do not treat this as a transactional business. Act as a consultant, a friend, and a mentor to those individuals. A lot of the candidates that I placed 12, 13 years ago as a senior accountant, today are CFOs. And the way that I treated them 10 years ago was, they remembered that. They also remember the recruiters that did not call them when they wanted a call back. So I would say maintain the relationships, do right by them. I don't know if they've ever been unemployed. I don't know if they've ever been in between jobs, but the feeling it's not, it's an uncomfortable feeling to not know, you know, when your next job is coming. But when you get a call from someone that you have a relationship with and you tell them, look, I'm still thinking about you, whether I have a job or not, it makes them feel that you at least care, because you should. So the advice I would give is, as long as you treat people the way they're supposed to, it'll always come back to you. The people will remember you not because you have the best jobs or the best candidates. It's because you treated them in the right way. And that's the way that this business should be built. Not by trying to get 50 jobs and hopefully one of the candidates matches. That's not a successful recruiter. My belief is, if you take on a job, it's because you believe in that culture. And if you represent a candidate, it's because you believe in them as a human.
Love that, Dario. That was really well said. And that's a perfect way to finish the podcast. So thank you so much. I'm really glad that James introduced us. And thanks for being here.
Yeah, James was there when I got fired. So I'm sure he remembers that story.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button, and I'll see you next time.